morning, Arizona.
Singing the same old cowboy song.
What a beautiful Arizona desert weekend day. Woohoo! And I want y'all up and awake looking into the east, because if this morning sunrise is anything close to last night's sunset, you're in for a treat. After living in Arizona 50 years, I don't know that last night's sunset has ever been surpassed. I called Jennifer on the ride home from the office. I said, you've got to get outside and see these colors. Absolutely fantastic sunset last night.
That was a shade on the mountains I have never seen before.
Oh, gosh. It's Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition. Good morning. And I'd like to start this morning with a little adventure story. As you know, in the 7 o'clock hour, we do whatever the Romero family is currently engaged in, and by way of having fun. We talk a lot about the books I read. I try and make my way through quite a few books. I've mentioned a particular book the last couple of weeks, and it's gotten an incredible response. Everybody wants to, they Facebook us, and they call us at the office during the week, and they say, what was the name of that book? Where do I get that book? So we've been very fortunate to be able to track down the author and invite him to join us on air here this morning. Arizona, let me introduce you to Kevin Fedarko. Kevin, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Rosie. It's so great to be here. Thank you.
Folks, the book is The Emerald Mild, and the subtitle pretty well wraps up the whole thing. The epic story of the fastest ride in history through the heart of the Grand Canyon. The book was given to me by Colorado River Guides, Arizona River Runners. And Kevin, I have to tell you, I'm usually in the middle of about three books. So it was a couple months before I finished a couple books that I could pick this one up. And man, when I picked this one up, I didn't pick up another book until I finished it. It is a spectacular read.
Well, thanks, Rosie. That's great to hear. I have to confess, I kind of had the same response when I heard the story for the first time as a river guide working down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, because what river guides do at night, there's a little ritual that we have, and every evening after we pulled into camp, after we have set up the tents and set up the kitchen and banged out dinner for our clients, after the sun has set and the stars have come out overhead, what we do is we sit around the campfire. If it's early spring or late fall, if it's the middle of the summer, we gather on the decks of our boats. And the river guides do the thing that they do probably better than anything else, which is they tell stories. They tell stories of things that have happened on the bottom of on the river at the bottom of the canyon. And those stories, they run a whole gamut. But over the years that I was down there, I came to realize that so many of those stories were revolving around or rooted in what was really just one story. It was the story of one season and one year and an epic set of events that basically changed the lives of everybody that witnessed them.
The story is three river guides opt to try and beat the record of any motorized traverse of the Grand Canyon, any motorboat. They're gonna get through the canyon faster than anyone. And in leading up to the actual story of launching the boat, here are some of the names of the chapters. First Contact, Chapter 1, starts in 1540, when the Spanish explorers stumble across this ditch. And they hardly enter into their journals how spectacular it is. Hardly mention it all. The next few chapters is one called The Kingdom of Water. There's another one, Dories, which is the name of the type of boat that was elected to try and make this quickest journey. There's The Deluge, and then there's The Speed Run. I mean, the backstory just kind of all comes together to make this like truly historical event.
Well, yeah, and I guess the reason for that, really, and I know you're from Louisiana, Rosie, and so, you know, you have traditions down there of storytelling, and one of the great principles of storytelling is that, you know, before you get to the heart of the matter, you really want to set things up. And the thing is, this this series of events that we're going to talk about, and this effort to break the standing speed record of the fastest boat ever to go through the Grand Canyon, that all unfolded inside what is probably the crown jewel of America's national park system, as well as, I think it's safe to say, the most iconic landscape feature that we have in North America. And, you know, we're talking about a 277-mile stretch of river that's running along the bottom of an abyss, stretching across northern Arizona, whose walls extend more than a mile into the sky. And those ramparts of rock, they're comprised of 26 different layers of stone, and the bloodlines, the lineage of that stone extends more than 1.7 billion years into the past. That's about a third the lifespan of the planet itself. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that this is an epic setting, an extraordinary place, and to really appreciate what unfolded in it during the spring of 1983, you really need to kind of get a sense of what it is and what makes it so magical.
You take us back to creation. We've got God giving us the Grand Canyon. Then we've got the Corps of Engineers giving us Glen Canyon Dam. And then again, we have the El Nino event of 1983. It's spectacular. When we were talking the other day, you were saying, Rosie, the lake was filling up twice as fast as they could empty it with every valve they had completely wide open. Now, for an engineer, that's got to be a scary moment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you've touched on what kicked the whole thing off. And it's appropriate we're having this conversation this morning because the winter of 1983, we saw in the West a series of weather events that haven't been matched until this winter. We're talking about, you know, what was the greatest El Nino event on record up to that time. A series of what were known at the time as superstorms that came roaring out of the Pacific, that collided up against the west coast of the United States, that spent the better part of that winter bludgeoning their way across the West and laying down an extraordinarily high level of snowpack across the southern Rockies. And then in late May of that year, the final weekend in May, the temperatures shot high into the 80s, and all of that snow, that huge blanket of snow at the tops of the mountains, came out of the mountains in one vast, huge, wet, uncontrollable rush. And it came roaring out of the Colorado Piedmont, and it started boring into the badlands of Utah, and it was all headed into one place, which was the upper tentacles of that enormous reservoir of water, 9 trillion gallons of water, and its 186-mile-long reservoir that backs up behind one of the greatest structures that we have in the Southwest, the Glen Canyon Dam, 710-foot-tall wall of concrete that's stretching across the Colorado River about 15 miles upstream from the gateway to the Grand Canyon. And the engineers at the Bureau of Reclamation who were in charge of that structure, who managed that structure, were so taken by surprise that by the time they figured out how much water was coming at them from the mountains in the spring of 1983, the surface of Lake Powell was clawing its way up the face of the Glen Canyon Dam twice as fast as they were capable of releasing water through the penstocks and the river outlet tubes, which are those portals and tubes inside the dam that enable them to release water and also generate power. And so to prevent what would have been a truly apocalyptic scenario, can you imagine?
Oh, gosh. If I had been any part of that engineering team, there would have been weeks I don't even think I would have gone to sleep.
Well, and these men, I mean, they would later tell me, because I had to reach out to them in the course of writing the book, and this was the greatest event in their career, right? This was the greatest challenge that they ever faced, because what they were trying to do was to stop a runaway river, and prevent probably the worst case scenario, which was a 500 foot tall waterfall pouring over the parapet of the Glen Canyon Dam, taking out the power plant at the base of the dam, and then creating a tsunami that would roar through the Grand Canyon. And in order to kind of get a handle on that, they had to turn to what was their insurance policy, which are these two giant boreholes that have been drilled through the sandstone cliffs on either side of the Glen Canyon Dam. They're known as spillway tunnels, and they're absolutely enormous, 40 feet in diameter.
40 feet in diameter borehole through solid rock. And there's how many of them?
So there are two of them. There's one on the east side of the dam. There's one on the west side of the dam. They're protected by a series of massive steel radial gates. And the water, once it enters those tunnels, travels at a 58-degree angle downslope until it reaches the base of the dam. And that's important because that water picks up speed, and by the time it's released through the mouth of those portals, it's going at about 120 miles an hour.
You've got the Park Service evacuating the river below, and we're going to need to go on a quick break here, but when we come back, we talk about this setting that now has culminated in this historical event is exactly the grounds Three River Guides decide, here's our chance. Let's launch this dory. Let's do this deed. Let's break this record. The book is The Emerald Mile. We're here with an interview with the author, Kevin Fedarko, who's graciously decided to join us here this early Saturday morning. When we get back, we'll talk more about The Emerald Mile. Y'all stay tuned right here this Saturday morning with Rosie on the house.